Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up, everybody, and burn down, burn down. The system fails, the exit rules. Wake up, the silence returns.
Welcome to the Star Chamber Show after a long hiatus and some brief technical difficulties tonight. This is Michael West, and my co-host tonight is Tony Akery. Tony?
Booyah! How you doing, Michael?
I'm all right. How are you?
Man, I'm already at least one fireball double shot in, so I'm doing pretty good.
I forgot the wonders of live blog talk radio.
Well, again,
but
almost here. Like if there wasn't at least something, it wouldn't be nearly as much fun, right? So how have
That's
you been,
right.
my friend?
That's right. Well, I was on death's door for a little while. I had a wonderful sinus infection, which became a lung infection. So that was fun.
Ouch.
But yeah. So I'm on the mend now. So I'm doing good. And yourself?
I'm doing really well, thank you. Been really busy, which when you're self-employed is a good thing. So.
Yes.
Books have consumed my life. As you know, we've known each other now for several years. 4 years ago, I wasn't involved in books at all, and now I'm an author, publisher, and bookstore owner. So, it seems like as much as I love books, it's now the way I make my living. It's a fantastic thing.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I've been in trying to get back into the swing of it. I wasn't able to put many words to paper while I was under the weather, so I'm trying to get slowly back into it, working on the final novel for my Legacy of the Gods series, so
nice.
A little bittersweet there.
Well, and like you, that a lot of people were not aware, I suffered a major concussion last August and wasn't able to write for many, many, many months, and I'm only recently back into the groove, so I hope to have a novel out later this summer. So we're going to make the big writing push. I've got two that I'm working on. I'm working on the fifth book in my best-selling Victor McCain series called The Unit, and my first ever PI novel called Jericho, set here in the Louisville metro area. So, it feels good to be back in a groove.
Awesome. Yeah, for years I have been basically writing on a bar down in the family room, kind of the common area. My oldest son moved out for good this time, hopefully, last year. So finally getting around to converting his room into my office. So hopefully by my birthday this coming September, I will have a dedicated space in which to do my work, so that will be nice. I'm looking forward to it.
I have a dedicated space. It's called Starbucks. and because my family can't find me there. They're at home. And although I think we should go ahead and mention the reason why I am visiting this evening is your normal, you know, the driving force behind Star Chamber Radio, Mr. Steven Zimmer, is not here this evening because he's got this little bitty project that he's working on that, you know, I think people would probably love to hear about.
Yes, Steven Zimmer, author and filmmaker extraordinaire, is in the process. He successfully crowdfunded a TV pilot for a television series based on his Raiden Valkyrie books, Heart of a Lion, and then the he just had a new one come out. Oh, my, and the title of it.
Yes, he did, for some after a couple of years.
Yes, but he was able to get that successfully crowdfunded, has full cast, crew, everything ready to go, and they start filming it next week. So wish him much luck and much success, and hopefully we'll, whether it be on a cable channel or Netflix or Hulu or some venue, you'll be able to keep up with the adventures of Raiden very soon.
Well, and I think I get to help out. Now, Steven has promised me that I get to play a dead body, and I can play dead really well. But I'm also getting to I'm helping to provide some of the transportation. My wife is offered to help with the navigation because I get to pick up Brock O'Hearn soon and bring him to the area. And my wife has no problems whatsoever helping with that. So, if anyone's ever seen Mr. O'Hearn, yeah, you can understand why my wife might make that. And of course, I'm not threatened personally because, you know, my wife and I made an agreement. If Sandra Bullock ever says she's looking for an ex pot-bellied mailman, I get an uncontested divorce. Now, my wife's side, she picked Heath Ledger. Ouch. And, you know, God bless. You know, rest in peace, Mr. Ledger, but her choice is no longer on the board. So we might be able to negotiate a trade if she wants to add Mr. O'Hearn to her list of, you know, the uncontested divorce giving away thing. So,
yeah, we don't call it an uncontested divorce. We call it a hall pass. But I have Sarah Michelle Gellar on mine, so we'll see. We'll see if that ever comes.
Oh, nice, nice choice. So Steven, yeah. If you're out there listening, my wife approves of the casting of Mr. Brock O'Hearn. She's very happy with that choice. So, and now because one of the things we had talked about, I would like to get your take before our two guests come on this evening. We have Stuart Thaman, fantasy author extraordinaire, and another gentleman I'm really looking forward to speaking to. I'm looking forward to speaking to Stu because I know Stu well. But Dan Jolly's coming on later in the show, and his career is just fascinating to see. But I know you've recently seen Guardians of the Galaxy, and I was curious what you thought.
I loved it. I thought it was as good, if not better, than the first. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought they did some nice character things. You know, it's funny coming from the mouth of a writer, but it's to me, if a writer, you know, because there's arguments as to how much of this is actually in the writing and how much of it is in the performance, but to me, if you can convey emotion and character and things without saying a word, you know, just in actions and the way people look and regard one another, you know, that whole if you can convey emotion without having to come out and just telegraph everything, you know.
Right.
To me, that's a hallmark of a really, really good cast and screenplay. And in this movie, there were several moments when characters just they didn't say anything, but they didn't have to say anything. It was all there.
Right.
It was all there, and it was really wonderful. Now, and another movie I saw recently, Alien Covenant. It would have been better if the character spoke less. So,
yeah. Now, see, I'm going to play the contrarian. Now, don't get me wrong. Let me say, I really enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy. The problem I had was I thought at times it tried too hard with the funny. And when it tried to be funny, there were times where I think they could have let a couple of the jokes go. Having said that, that's a very small complaint.
Yeah.
And I think I would really love to have Kurt Russell's hair. So, I think I'm going to try for that style, that really Moses kind of, you know, flowing locks. I mean, Kurt Russell, you know, people of my generation, we grew up with him with, you know, the computer that wore tennis shoes way back in the day. And he's kind of like, you know, me growing up being an actor. So, I mean, I love Kurt Russell. My guilty pleasure movie is Big Trouble in Little China. That's one of my all-time favorite flicks.
Yes.
But I think I'd really like to have Kurt Russell hair. I think I would.
Yeah, I you know, growing up, you know, seeing Kurt Russell play Snake Plissken in Escape from New York, and then MacReady in The Thing. You know, he was the for me and for my generation, he was like the ultimate badass. And then it was kind of funny to turn that on its head in Big Trouble in Little China and have him play kind of the buffoon instead of the action hero. So,
yeah. They'll come back, call the president. That might be in our group the most quoted movie, you know, because my favorite is It's All in the Reflexes. So, you know, between that and The Princess Bride, they're the two most quoted.
Yeah. My favorite line in the whole movie has to be, you know, are you crazy? Is that your problem?
Come back and rule the world from beyond the grave, or, you know, yeah, that's a great flick. So, now, I've seen all the Alien movies because I'm a weird one, Mr. West. I write scary books, but I don't like scary movies. So, the question I have for you is, should I wait until I can watch Alien Covenant in my house and fast forward two scenes and hide behind my couch? Or should I see it on the big screen? Is it going to lose something if I wait until it comes out on the small screen?
I don't think so. I mean, Prometheus was filmed in the you know, prequel to this was filmed in 3D using James Cameron's technology that he used for Avatar. And they actually physically built all the sets. And so it was really nice to see that in IMAX because you really got a sense of the vastness of these sets. And so it was really, really, really cool to see that on the big screen. And but this one, it was very frustrating for me because it started off as interesting science fiction, and then it kind of devolved into, you know, run-of-the-mill horror. And at some point, it almost felt like a sci-fi channel, you know, original movie. You know,
that's not good.
I mean, no, it's frustrating because it's like, well, David. Michael Fassbender, who plays David, is amazing, and I would watch him in anything. You know, he's one of the best actors out there right now, I think. And he does an amazing job in the movie. And when he's on the screen, it's worth watching. But you know, it's just I'm so sick of movies, especially movies which involve space travel, where you have these professionals who, you know, they are professionals that to get to where they are, you would think that they would have some sort of, you know, smarts to them, you know, to be able to do what they do and whatnot. But it seems like as soon as anything horrific or alien-esque, you know, rears its ugly head, literally, their brain gets jettisoned out the airlock. And it's just, they, you know, there was one scene in particular that almost played like a Three Stooges comedy. I mean, it was that ridiculous, the fact that people were like, you know, slipping in blood and you know, doing all this stuff that, I literally was laughing, you know, and it was a scene that should have played, you know, had it been done better, it should have been terrifying, and it wasn't. It was
right.
Hysterical.
I was going to say, and then the transition from that, I know something that you and I are both looking forward to, because I already have reserved seats for it, is Wonder Woman, which comes out this week. And by all accounts, it's already got a 90-plus rating on Rotten Tomatoes. And all the reviews seem
right.
to be absolutely stellar. Except for the one review in The Guardian, where the UK, they don't particularly care for her much in one review. But otherwise, it's just getting absolutely fabulous reviews for it. I can't wait to see that. And my girls, a lot of people don't know me. I have twin girls that turned 14 at the end of June. And it's nice that they finally have a superhero that is the feature of a movie. Because, of course, you've had Black Widow now for a while, but to actually be the centerpiece of a movie, it's good that they have something that they can, a hero they can call their own for their genre, so to speak. And I've been rather amused at the people who have been up in arms about an all-woman viewing of the movie. I find that just silly, personally. But, we can't wait to see that this coming weekend.
Hey, we'll bring you on here in just a moment.
I think we all heard that, Michael.
Oh,
are you there?
You know what? Yep, technical
Hello?
Difficulties. Hello. We have a good thing on our first guest. Stu, is that you?
Hey. Yeah, I think it's working. How's it going, guys?
I think I should start by saying, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. So,
Yeah, well, I zigged when I should have zagged on that one. And wrapping up what you were saying, Tony, yes, I agree. I think it's great to finally have. You know, I love women who kick butt, and so I'm anxious to see Wonder Woman come on the screen and do just that. So, but Stu,
well, in Justice
welcome.
League, I'm going to say in the Justice League movie or Batman versus Superman, excuse me, where the one scene where she gets hit and she kind of wipes her chin and smirks, I went, oh, she's good. And if you don't mind, I'll go and do the introductions for Stuart, since being the owner of Hydra Publications, Stuart Thamen is one of our bright young fantasy authors. In fact, he is our only young fantasy author in Hydra Publications. So, Stu, we're happy you could join us this evening, because he's got a brand new novel out called Shadowless, the first book in the Umbral Blade series. Did I get all that right, Stu?
Yeah, it sounds right. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, dude, like I said, I'm on my second glass of Fireball. I'm just happy I got that right. So,
Hey, it sounds good to me.
You're from the Cincinnati area, correct?
Yeah, born and raised here.
So, do you have any questions right off the bat for you, Michael, or would you like me to ask a couple?
No, go ahead.
Well, Stuart, in a very short time, particularly, I want to talk to him something about something we're seeing a difference in that in the Kindle on the Amazon side of things. One of the things that Stu gets that a lot of people, other writers don't, are page reads. So how did you kind of fall into that click, Stu, about finding people in that niche of people actually doing page reads as opposed to actually buying the actual ebooks, because that's been a long debate for the last year or two when Kindle started this, is it worth doing the page reads versus buying the ebooks? And quite frankly, you're proving that it can be a success.
Yeah, so when Kindle Unlimited came out, I think a lot of authors were in sort of the same boat, thinking that this is something marketed specifically toward romance and erotica, and that's what Amazon pushed it as a Netflix for books platform that specifically targeted those genres, because the way they paid their authors was based on the number of books they had borrowed. And so you'd have a lot of authors and a lot of very successful authors that were churning out a 5 or 10,000 word novella every other day and posting it up on Kindle Unlimited. And they were putting out such a high volume, they would have 300 or 400 books out there. And those books ended up just being, you know, part 1, 2, 3, 4, 10, 15, and 20 of the same series or the same characters at least. And you had a massive surge of romance and erotica authors doing that and making a lot of money off of it. And those authors are really smart for recognizing that opportunity. But what happened that made me take a look at it, because I had never considered Kindle Unlimited as a platform. I just wanted the broadest reach for all my stuff. But I think it was about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, Kindle switched to, instead of doing number of borrows you got, so favoring the shorter works, they did it based on page reads, and that favors longer works. And naturally, longer works are going to be fantasy, sci-fi, speculative fiction type stuff, and that's what's going to have the highest profit margin, not these little 5,000-word novellas and flash fiction series like that. It'll be the big, lengthy, 900-page fantasy tomes. So that was actually the first thing I ever had go into Kindle Unlimited was I think it's about 920 pages, fantasy omnibus with 3 books in it. And I figured, just doing the math off of that, if somebody reads the entire omnibus in Kindle Unlimited, I'll get paid within about 10 or 20 cents or something like that of what I would get from the royalty of them just downloading it. So I figured I'd give it a try, started pushing that, and I think my stuff's been in Kindle Unlimited for a little bit less than a year now, maybe like 8 or 10 months, something like that, and started doing some advertising and whatnot that focused on Kindle Unlimited, changing keywords to other authors that were in Kindle Unlimited, and I think I might be one of the only pretty successful fantasy authors there, because it's still a genre that's just not big on Kindle Unlimited, but that means I can capture more of the market, and I think that change to page reads really favors all the speculative fiction writers that have the really long, lengthy works, because one read through can get us a lot more money than that 5,000 word novella. And that change in the game, so to speak, has been what pushed me to actually go there. And now, like you said, it is where I'm finding almost all of my success. I'd say probably 75-80% of all of my royalties nowadays come from Kindle Unlimited.
Well, and again, compared to some of our other writers, well, there is no comparison. I mean, you're doing, you know, hundreds of thousands of page reads. So, Michael, my question for you is, because you've got quite a few novels out, have you ever dabbled into the page read side of things, or how did you approach that?
Yeah, no, I haven't. I haven't really delved into that yet, and that's why I was listening very intently, because I'm curious as to how that translates, or, you know, as far as you know, to an author's paycheck, basically.
Well, like, that's in our case, we have a couple of writers that do well across platforms. Bill Noel, one of our mystery writers, he does well both on, he's one of the few writers that sells, you know, quite a few, well, you know, more than normal on Nook and iTunes and other places. But, you know, for us, for every, you know, 100 books we sell on Amazon, we might sell 5 books on the other platforms. And that's why this has been interesting to watch how Stewart's books have done from a publisher standpoint. Because, you know, we like to have our books everywhere. We want them available to anybody on any platform. But quite frankly, when you can make so much more money in this situation, it's hard, at least for the initial 90 days that you have to have the book up on Kindle to get this, it's hard to turn that down. So what we're looking to do is maybe do what, you know, keep a book up for 6 months on doing page reads and then translate it to other platforms. So, but, you know, it's been interesting.
Now, maybe for those who are uninitiated, can you explain, you know, page reads and how it differs from just downloading the book?
Sure. What Kindle does is they have a pool of money, and they've got Kindle Unlimited. So, like, when you go to buy a book, you're an Amazon Prime member, and you go to buy a Kindle book and you see that you can get it for free, that means you're offered so many books a month that you get to read for free. And what they do is for how many pages you read. Let's say I read a 300-page novel, that writer gets paid so many percentage of a cent for each page that I read. And they've got a pool that they use to base on how much money they're going to pay out that month. I think this past month, you know, don't quote me on this, but I seem to remember it was $12 million that they split among all the people who had page reads. But to do that, your book has to be only available on Amazon Kindle. You can't have it available for Nook or iTunes or Kobo. It has to be for Kindle only, and they require that you keep it there a minimum of 90 days. So, you know, as much as we all like to complain about Amazon as far as being the 900-pound gorilla and how they really forced the price of the books down so that as a general across the board, it really affects us all because we're getting paid less for every book that we sell because Amazon is constantly pressing that price point down. I'm finding that particularly, you know, we're looking at more options the way Stuart does his books, but you have to market it a certain way as well. Because something else that, Stuart, I want you to talk about is because you're big on Reddit, correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And don't you think that has a huge part of your success is because you're the amount of time you spend there?
Yeah, definitely. That is a huge aspect of my marketing strategy. And I was a Redditor before I was an author, but I was on Reddit as just a fan and just a person before I was on there also looking to market. And basically, I've had a couple posts that have been specifically about my books that have hit the front page and had, I think the last one had about 700,000 views on Imgur and whatnot, and an untold amount on Reddit as well, and that generated a pretty extreme boost in sales. But the biggest thing is there is one subreddit specifically for indie publishing, and it's just called Reddit r/self-publish, and that has about, I think we're at about 13,500 subscribers now, gaining about 10 a day, which is pretty good. And that is just a community mostly for self-published authors, but also for any type of indie press author. There's a lot of names you might recognize. Chris Fox is big on there. Hugh Howey came and did an AMA for us and visits the subreddit pretty frequently. And on there, just having a constant presence where anytime anyone asks for advice, I'm one of the first voices that jumps in, gives my thoughts, and you know, might not always be right, but at least be pretty close and point them in the right direction or telling someone where they need to go to find their answers. But being that constant voice on there and then people know who I am outside of that, that sort of gives me a little bit of, I guess, online street credibility that I then can leverage. So when I do talk about my books, people go, oh, that's Gravlox from Reddit. That guy knows his shit. I bet his books are really good, and it encourages them hopefully to go ahead and pick up one of my novels.
Now,
very cool.
You've also
very
got
cool.
You. Oh, go ahead, Michael.
No. Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say also you've got a horror title that just in the past week again hit a bestseller list. What have you're doing some other things besides just writing novels. This is what fascinates me about Dan Jolly when he comes on next, is that people like you and Dan Jolly, you're really branching out to do other stuff because you're involved in some other types of writing, correct?
Oh, yeah. Especially this year, I've been trying to ramp up my writing as much as possible. And I've got – I actually have another book that I just finished. It took me 54 days to write. It's my fastest novel to date for an 80,000-word book. But I've got that one that I'm actually on Friday meeting with to sell him that novel, and that's going to be the first in a series and novelization that is going to be sort of the bringing to life of a miniatures game. So think like Warhammer, if you've ever heard of that, but a tabletop miniatures game that's made here locally in Cincinnati that has a pretty good following. It's called The Chaos Wars, and that's going to be the first and hopefully a long line of novels for that series. And then I've also got a lit RPG, which is a genre I just recently got into because I read a free lit RPG that someone from Reddit had actually suggested to me and got hooked on that genre. And it's basically a video game in paperback form and not a choose-your-own-adventure, which I thought it was going to be, which I was very excited for, but not like that, but just simply kind of like reading about someone who's the one I read was a guy gets mysteriously transported from our world into a medieval style fantasy. And there's magic and ogres and all that kind of stuff, and he's just got to figure out how to survive. And so my lit RPG, which I think I'm around 12,000 words in, it'll be done in about 30,000 word installments, is a blood witch in a fantasy world has been watching this powerful demon and is going to try to summon the demon to help her. And she doesn't realize that she's been watching someone's computer screen as they play World of Warcraft. And she accidentally summons the guy who owns the character, whose name is Steve, and he's an accountant and doesn't know anything about fighting or anything. And so it'll be a pretty funny, pretty cool adventure and that kind of thing. But yeah, trying to open my writing world, so to say, to all avenues and try to hit as much as I possibly can in every single aspect of it and get my name out in lots and lots of different venues.
And I think that's something else too, a point that you make about using your own blog. You mentioned, Michael, I want to let you know that you should go try it on Stu's blog. He has a Choose Your Own Adventure on there, and it's a blast. And, Stu, why don't you mention that a little bit? Because it brings a lot of traffic to your own personal blog, which then in turn allows people to see your
work. Yeah, I started writing that. Yep, started that about maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago or so, just because I felt like it and I was kind of bored and I wanted to write a Choose Your Own Adventure because I grew up reading them, as so many of us did. And they're a ton of fun, and Choose Your Own Adventures are the best. And I actually got the idea from another author that we know, A.J. Scudieri, who actually just mentioned a title of a practice novel she had written at a convention once. And I remember the title, it was Melissa's Heart, and I thought it was hilarious because the book was actually some thriller, and she just gave it a title, and there's no one even named Melissa in the book. She just needed something to title her document. And I thought, well, maybe I could write a book called Melissa's Heart that won't be romance at all, like the title would imply. But the main plot is a demon from hell is trying to get Melissa's physical heart to sacrifice on an altar to summon the devil. And that's the main plot of it. And you can pick, there's actually three different playable characters, as I like to say. And you can play as the main character, Melissa, who's sort of a smart, sassy high school character. And then there's the fat wow nerd that you can play, and then you can actually play as the demon from hell and try to harvest souls for the devil. And it's a choose your own adventure. You just click through it on the website, totally free, and a lot of people have told me they really enjoy that kind of thing because it's humorous, but it's also some pretty gritty horror at times, which you just don't see in those old school choose your own adventure books.
Well, I've done them all three. I've played all three characters, and it's a lot of fun.
Good stuff.
While we got a moment here, why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, so my main website that I run pretty much all of my online presence through is StuartThamonBooks.com. And then on Twitter, I should just be at StuartThamon. Pretty easy, pretty simple one there. And then on Reddit as well, since we talked about that a good amount, my username is Gravlox15. So Gravlox being my main character from my Goblin Wars series there. So StuartThamonBooks.com, StuartThamon on Twitter, and Gravlox15 on Reddit.
And real quick, talk a little bit about Goblin Wars. I want you to know that my nephew bought one of the copies at Karen's Book Barn. Yes, there's a quick plug for Karen's Book Barn, a store that I, Frank Hall, and Josiah Davis, an editor, and Tammy Benz own in LaGrange, Kentucky. So tell us a little bit about Goblin Wars. I think that's a unique take on the fantasy genre as well.
Yeah, that's what I wanted that entire series to be, was unique, because I've read a lot of fantasy, and a lot of fantasy really just feels stale. And you read something, and you're like, well, this is Lord of the Rings with cooler names, or you read it, and this is Game of Thrones with not as cool a names. And it just turns out to be the same stuff that the mainstream publishers are putting out. And I got my idea for Goblin Wars because I was working at the time as a corporate translator and helping out at a German restaurant here in town. And on the menu, one of the appetizers they served was called Gravlox, which is salmon on crackers with some spices and whatnot. And I had never seen the name before, and I looked at it and I just go, that sounds like a goblin to me. And I've always liked goblins. They're just a cool fantasy race. I like the quirky little guys and the constant underdog kind of feel. And I got to thinking, if I wanted to make a fantasy where the main character is a goblin, and my first challenge when I thought about that was, well, why are goblins expendable? Why are they always the one, it's a million goblins. Well, don't worry, we have 10 farmers with pitchforks. That'll be enough. And why are they always just the worst possible fighters, the worst heroes, and just terribly bad in every fantasy universe? And I thought, well, maybe what if that's their plan? And what if that's their mastermind overall? That is their goal, is to make humanity think that they're nothing to worry about. So when they finally show up and put their end game plan into motion, then they're going to crush because no one's ready for them. And so I made my main character of the Goblin Wars is Gravlox. He's a goblin. And all of my goblins, except for him, are actually hive mind drones controlled by one goblin overlord that are, you know, working this master plan behind the scenes to trick the humans, essentially. And Gravlox is the main character, and he's outside the hive mind, realizes that he's sort of a threat to the hive mind because he's not connected to it, and leaves his mountain home in pursuit of adventure and a better life. So definitely incredibly unique. You're not going to find that and that perspective in any other fantasy on the market, I guarantee it.
Hey, Michael, this makes me want to go out and write a new sci-fi series where the red shirts are all, you know, always are the kick-ass heroes, you know?
Yeah, there you go. I like it.
What I want to do. So if I can ask one more question, is Dan Jolly around yet, Michael?
Dan what? Is around, Ooh. Yes.
Oh,
I heard my name. Hello.
Stuart, thanks for coming on and joining us here. I think we're going to kick you off so you can enjoy a cigar.
Well, thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for
that
coming.
That sounds like a plan to me.
All right, man. Thanks for being there. Well, now we want a bunch of hell out of Dan Jolly.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, as you heard, joining us now is novelist and comic book writer Dan Jolly. Dan, welcome to the Star Chamber Show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, you are someone who has pretty much done it all, books and comics and video games. What are some of the things that you're working on now or you know, have recently come out?
Let's see. Recently come out, well, just a couple of days ago, my latest novel came out. It's the second book in the Grey Widow trilogy. The first book was Grey Widow's Walk, and this book is called Grey Widow's Web. I'm really, really, really
yes.
excited about that, getting that out there. That's very much a passion project of mine. That's a story that I began many, 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 many years ago. In fact, I wrote the first draft of what would eventually become that book of Grey Widow's Walk in 1996. And wrote it. No one was interested in it. In fact, at the time, and this is really hilarious now that we're looking at all the movies and TV shows that are out there. But at the time, people said to me, "Superheroes? No one cares about superheroes. What are you doing?" So I put it on the shelf and it sat there for about 10 years, and I pulled it back off the shelf and rewrote it, and it still didn't go anywhere. So it went back on the shelf for about another 10 years, and I finally realized one big thing that was wrong with it. The main character, to begin with, had been a guy, and I changed it so that it became the heroine that readers of the series know now, Janie Sinclair. And everything clicked. The story clicked, and it immediately got picked up by Seventh Star. The great... Sorry, what?
Oh, we're going to just say nice.
Yeah. We were talking earlier about how I love women who kick butt, and your character definitely does that.
Yeah. She's not always the most confident in all aspects of her life, but yeah, you don't want to piss her off.
No.
I guess for those listening who aren't familiar with the trilogy, the Grey Widow trilogy is about a young woman in modern-day Atlanta who is fending off a secret alien invasion. That's the gist of it. And the first book definitely is pretty heavy on superhero tropes, but I've really always thought of superhero stories as science fiction. And the science fiction angle gets heavier and heavier as the series goes. The first book, the main character, Janie, doesn't know how she got the ability to teleport. And in the second book, she finds out exactly how that happened. And I don't want to say too much about what people can expect with the third book, which is coming out next year. But lots more information will be revealed. And there might even be some visitors, some more visitors from off-planet. Anyway, what else I've got going on? I also have a middle grade series coming out called Five Elements. And the second book in that series is coming out at the end of July. That'll be available everywhere.
The first book was the Emerald Tablet.
Yes. Yes, in the second book, I think you can pre-order it on Amazon already. It's called The Shadow City. That's kind of like urban fantasy for kids. It's aimed at 9 to 12-year-olds, but my older sister read it, and she said, Dan, this book is too scary. I don't think I would have let my children read this book. And you know, it's like the editors at HarperCollins, I was putting in scenes that I thought, man, they're going to tell me to dial it back. They're going to say, no, this is for kids. You know, you've got these horrible skinless monsters and, you know, mortal danger and threatening to eat the kids alive from the feet up and stuff like that. And the editors were like, no, that's great. That's great. Do more of that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, you know, it's amazing to me just how, you know, I think a lot of it is just that, you know, kids have become much more sophisticated. And you know, when we were, you know, there was much more shielding of children, should we say, you know, back when we were kids. We were talking earlier about Escape from New York. I mean, I remember setting my alarm and sneaking downstairs, you know, hearing the stairs creak and everything else, you know, to turn on HBO or whatever in the middle of the night so I could watch, like, you know, the horror movies and whatnot. and now, you know, you got Walking Dead on in prime time, you know, so it's...
And, you know, when I was a kid, lo, these many moons ago, I watched Saturday morning cartoons, because I didn't really have much else to do on Saturday mornings. I always really felt talked down to. I mean, even when I was like six, you know, watching Super Friends, I'm like, you know, I knew back then that the Super Friends was in many ways, and I'm probably going to offend a lot of listeners, but in many ways, the Super Friends was incredibly lame. You know, I'm like Superman doesn't ever punch anybody,
right.
And I think that was why I and a lot of other people got drawn to anime when that first became available in the States, really, just because all of a sudden I felt like even when it was like a show aimed at kids, I felt a whole lot less talked down to. That was why I got interested in Voltron.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
and the thing is Voltron, and I remember Battle of the Planets, I think it was called.
Right.
When I was a wee one.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, they had some dark, some weighty issues and some really, you know, scary monsters that were in there, and you never saw that from the American shows. The American shows, everything was like, you know, very, I don't know if campy is the right word, but it was very much, you know,
it was pap.
Right.
It was candy colored pap is what it was.
You know, it's like, you know, everything, you know, G.I. Joe would come out and say, you know, don't cross the street unless you see the red light, you know, knowing it's half
right.
The battle, you know, all the public service announcements in the guise of entertainment, you know.
yeah. So like now I'm writing these books and I can have all these situations, put the kids in. Because Five Elements is about these four kids that get bound to the elemental elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And it's the kind of magic that I really appreciate. It's not so much that they have to struggle to get good at it. It's that they have to struggle to hold back They have to struggle not to
right.
get out of control. And so I got to really cut loose with some massive, massive destruction in these books. It was a lot of fun.
Very cool.
You mentioned I have done like comics and novels and video games. The last big video
right.
game I worked on, it was a couple of years ago. It was called Dying Light.
Yes.
But at present, I'm currently trying to sort of got my toes dipped in the waters of television. And I can't really say anything
cool.
about it because things are still very much in flux. But I got some encouraging news tonight, in fact. So, you know, nothing written in stone yet, but I hope to have something good to share in the near future.
Now,
well, that is awesome. You heard it here first, people.
Yeah. I'm sorry, you guys are both talking at once, and I couldn't understand either one of you.
No, I'm gonna say, Dan, if you want to take a big sip of bourbon and then just kind of let something slip, you can blame it on the alcohol. You know, that's all right.
No, I was.
You know, I've gotten really good at holding my tongue, though. Like, it was really good practice. I did the teen novelization for the movie Iron Man, and like they sent me the screenplay for Iron Man like a year before the movie came out. And in the contract, like I had always wondered how people were able to keep such, you know, tight lips about projects that they were working on for so long. But in the contract, it's stated that if information about the project got leaked, and if it were traced back to me as the source of the leak, I would be liable for damages. And it didn't put a number on the damages. It was basically like, whatever we feel like saying you're liable for, you're going to be liable for. And, you know, I do not have $47 million lying around. So
right.
I did not say a single thing to anybody about that screenplay for a solid year.
Well, in the mid-2000s, you did what would be my brother's dream project, which was a crossover of G.I. Joe and Transformers.
Oh yeah, I did. Well, I did part two, G.I. Joe versus
part
the Transformers,
two, right.
part two. That's that was also a lot of fun. You know, I have this sort of weird relationship with Hasbro. Hasbro's very protective of their brands, and they are of the opinion that a lot of writers like don't get it, like they don't get the voice. But for whatever reason, they decided that I get the voice, and so they were behind almost every like idea and choice and decision that I made in there. So, you know, yes, I was able to have Snake Eyes slice open Starscream's eyeball with a katana and shove a grenade into it. I'm very proud of that moment.
that is awesome. You have a very unique perspective then something I've been interested in for a while, and that is, you know, you get to play in other people's playground, so to speak. You know, you did work with, especially in the video games, with James Cameron's Avatar, and you know, you've done Transformers both in comics and video games. And, you know, what's it like to get to, you know, inject your own ideas and stories into somebody else's, you know, mythology or world?
Well, it all depends on the license holder. I mean, like working for DC Comics, they are the license holder, and you're in direct communication with them. And, you know, your editor is the gatekeeper. You can't do anything that your editor doesn't approve. In other realms, Transformer stuff, it's all up to the license holder, and they vary greatly in their attitudes and their standards. Like I mentioned Hasbro before, they're very exacting. You know, like I was able to tune into their voice, and so I didn't have any trouble. But they have very, very particular ideas of what they want their stories to be like. On the other hand, Voltron... World Events is the license holder company for them. And they like either I just really lucked into it again and got the voice right, or they're a lot more relaxed because, like, I turned in the initial pitch and they were like, "Yeah, that sounds great, do it." And you know, like every story idea that I turned in, they came back and said, "Yeah, this is great, go ahead." And then you got like a middle ground. I did a couple of years ago, I did a Terminator miniseries for Dark Horse. And
right.
And the license holder really only had one very specific note. He wanted to make sure that the Terminator, which was a T-800 model, it wasn't the 101, it was a different T-800 series, it wasn't a 101 model. They wanted to make
right.
sure that the Terminator moved in a very stiff, lumbering, robotic way. Like, they didn't want to see him doing flips and pirouettes and, you know, graceful stuff. They wanted him to be like this very plodding, deliberate juggernaut.
Gotcha.
But that was easily accommodated. As far as the story,
right.
they were like, it was echoes of world events because they said, "Oh, yeah, that sounds great. Do it."
Was there is there any dream project that you have wanted to do that you haven't gotten a chance to do yet?
Oh. You know,
if anybody's out there listening that
Well, you know, honestly not really, because I mean, this is kind of an attitude just achieved by being a freelancer for 2+ decades. Almost any project or almost any character you can do anything with them, depending on who's in charge, how much leeway you have, and what you're going for. And you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I don't think anybody wants to see a gritty reboot of SpongeBob.
Right.
But you know, like if you wanted to take, I think there's an upcoming TV series, Cloak and Dagger. If you wanted to take Cloak and Dagger from Marvel, if you wanted to take them and make it into like a screwball comedy, if you had the right talent attached, you could. And like basically, what I'm saying is, freelancers don't say no to things, you know, given enough leeway, if you've got an editor that you're in perfect sync with, you know, you've got a really good solid vision, you can make any project your dream project. You know, anything.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Do what? Well, like I don't know how many people would have said a few years ago, you know, what could showcase some really, really good, solid, emotionally evocative writing? My Little Pony.
Yeah.
And yet.
But, they're giving us
really...
the wrap-up sign here, Dan. So
okay.
If you want, please let everybody know where they can find your stuff.
You can go to my website, which is www.danjolley.com, and that's DanJolley. You can find me on Twitter at _DanJolley, again, DanJolley. And I'm on Facebook. I think it's Dan.Jolley1, I think is it. But yeah, take a look at my website. Send me a tweet or whatever. I will gladly interact with and answer anybody and everybody.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on board.
Sure.
Thanks to our listeners for putting up with some technical difficulties. We are back and we're happy to be back and look forward to our next show. So thank you, Tony, for joining me.
Woohoo! Happy to do it, Mike. Always a pleasure.
And we'll see you later. Thanks for listening to the Star Chamber Show.
Good night.